Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. It is the first day of a new year full of possibilities. 2021, I'm here overlooking the Jungfrau. We can't see a thing. We're socked in with Thomas Meyer. Thomas, Happy New Year, and thank you for such a wonderful treat to join you and your family in the Jungfrau. It's smashing.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you for being here. And I think Happy New Year to all your listeners. We're sitting here and looking out into the fog, and maybe that's a little bit symptomatic.
Yeah.
I think it's good if the fog is at the beginning of the year, and then it gets clearer and clearer. And then we really see the mountains, that we only know that they are there now, but we don't see them.
So I have to just mention this because it was so remarkable this morning. I hadn't opened my firecracker from our New Year's Eve party. And so all this week I've been talking about the fact that as people leave the establishment, it creates new possibilities, especially for freedom. And then this morning I opened the firecracker, and what does it say?
It says, if you tackle the possible will become real.
There you go.
That's you. Bless you. That's a fantastic...
You know, Ronzi, I used to have a friend who would quote Chitino, a Brazilian term, the magic that comes in dangerous times.
Yeah.
And it feels like on this trip, the magic, the Chitino...
Yeah, that's a great thing. Yeah. You know, as my dear beloved Dean Dunlop, founder of a World Economic Organization, said, I'm coming back to him, he once said to a friend, you can do the impossible. What else is worth doing? It's fitting.
You read us a passage from Dunlop last night, which was quite beautiful, and I want you to publish.
We will. Yeah. We will. I talk to Osher. Okay, so a great surprise for me, for you, for many friends maybe, was that President Trump, and we're not going into the motives why he did it, but there is a beautiful appreciation of the life and deeds and striving of Thomas Becket, who was murdered in the cathedral. There is the play by T.S. Eliot. There is a play by Tennyson, not so known, and a few other people. And he was a remarkable martyr in the 12th century. He was murdered in Canterbury in 2073, 29th of December. Now, Trump issues a really appreciation of the 850, please correct me if I'm wrong, anniversary of this death of this martyr. What is remarkable about him, in the context of our subject also? He fought for the liberty of the church. Having been the chancellor of Henry II and the friend, Henry II said, I make you the Archbishop of England, but he speculated that he would have the church in his pocket by having elected the Archbishop. And Becket warned him and said, be aware. If I have another master than you, I will abide to him, not to you. And he didn't take that seriously. But so he acted. And he said at some time, there is only one ruler up there for me now in my function. So he followed the policy of having the church not being meddled in by any royal or state affair. And this is a modern thing.
Right.
He was paving the way to the Magna Carta by this.
Which was not that long afterwards.
No, 215. That's right. 50 years later.
Right.
He paved the way also in a way to the dealings of a close kin, spiritual kin of his, Thomas More, who was beheaded because he didn't accept Henry VIII's dealing with the church in a very autocratic way. So we have a man who is preparing the way for the cultural life, the religious life at that time, you could say it was the cultural life, has to have its own sphere, uninfluenced by the state affairs. That's modern. You can tell you, listeners, if you want, what you think, why
so
did that?
So you gave me this wonderful lecture of Steiner about the threefold social order and why it was essential. And I absolutely agree with this, that the legal aspects of a society and the cultural aspects be completely independent of the economy. Not when I say independent, I don't mean that they're not respectful.
Of course.
But they're not controlled by the economic.
Now there is a series of steps to what Steiner formulated as an ideal for the present time, and we come to that. And the second step after Beckett and others was the French Revolution. Everyone knows the three ideals issued at the French Revolution: freedom, equality, brotherhood. And everyone can think, ponder about these and will say, they are all wonderful. Nothing against the ideal of freedom. Nothing against the ideal of brotherhood. They should all be followed. The problem is, in a social state, in a social organism, in which economy, politics, legal sphere, cultural go all are meddled and managed from a central point, like in France or in any monarchy or in any European state today, the EU, a centralized mode of bringing these three cultural spheres into operation won't allow you to practice these three basic ideals. So the French Revolution brought out a great true trinity of ideals, but it was not able to show how they can be practiced. For example, if freedom is practiced in the sphere where you would have brotherhood, and that's the economic sphere, because the economic sphere is for everyone in the world. We all need bread. If you have freedom there, then you have the globalist elite who makes use of their dominant powers about economics. It's a perversion.
Remember, to get that control, they keep continually break the law.
Yeah, sure. So they break the law.
That's why you need a legal function that can...
Absolutely. You
know, for a market to work, there has to be law, and there has to be enforcement independent of the Beck brothers. Beck brothers doing your legal system, you're in trouble.
But the basic point here for me is brotherhood refers to the needs of the human body to be fed all over the world, global. So you have to have a possibility to be global and not to be an elite who runs the globe, so to speak. Same with equality. That belongs into the sphere of the rights. In front of the rights, legally, we are all the same. There is no difference.
Right.
And if you have the equality ideal in the cultural sphere, that's terrible. Then you have everyone should think the same thing. That's then Bolshevism. So you had three great ideas, and I think they all had an echo in the human souls of that time very deeply, but it was not practical.
And part of the challenge is, if you have the developed world trying to practice the ideals, and their economy depends on raping the rest of the world, when you globalize, that means that whole model has to change.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So the fundamental idea is, one of the fundamental ideas, these three ideals refer to three parts of every human being. You have the physical bodily part, brotherhood, economic. You have the equality part, which can only be realized if you realize that we have something in common all over the world, and this is the spirit. In spirit, we are alike. There is no two laws of what is a triangle. Everyone has the same access to the same idea. That's the basis for equality. And then we have the free soul moving towards the spiritual or towards the economic sphere. And this is our soul. So we have soul, spirit, body, correspondent to these three ideals. But how to, and they are true, they're deeply in everyone.
Right.
But how to realize them? And so we have so far a social organism which is centralized, centrally managed, and that blocks the possibility of giving these three ideals the true chance to be realized. So that's why Steiner, I think, was the first one who said, these ideas are wonderful, but if you want to practice them, you need a threefold organism, socialist organism, in which you can practice these three. The first is the freedom sphere, which goes into culture. Everyone is, as an individual, capable to bring in his own impulses. Then you have the right spheres, which is the equality sphere. There you have the majority. In the freedom sphere of the individual, no vote does make any sense. You have to say what you think. Catherine, Austin Fitz, or Thomas Meyer, whoever. For there is only your individual input important. In the equality sphere, you have a larger community. You could even say the rights are in people a little bit even different. For example, in certain countries, it would be considered rightful to have, say, 8 hours per day working. In others, from another climatic point of view, that's too much. So you have a law saying the normal quantity of working hours is maybe 5 or 6. That can differ from people to people. And the economic sphere, where you have to practice brotherlyhood as the Templars were doing, as the great forerunners of a true brotherlyhood-based economic life, we have the whole humanity. So we have the individual, we have a certain social community, and we have the whole humanity. These refer to the three fields. The first is, of course, a free cultural life, and that's why, and this can only be done if you have a corresponding education system, which doesn't fill the pupils with prefabricated knowledge, but which stimulates them to become individuals, mm-hmm. not IT robots, mm-hmm. with their own thoughts. And this was the great idea of the first Waldorf school that was founded with the money of a man who was having a factory. And it was the school for the children in the factory. That was the
beginning. Should remind everybody, we did a long interview on Waldorf that they can go back and
very
hear
good.
All about it. Right?
Excellent, yeah. Emil Molt.
Yeah.
So in 1919, the first Waldorf school started. And they had also, you know, knowing the human being deeply, Steiner thought and said, it is not good that you have every day, every different things taught and keep it in your memory all the time. He started to say, we need a couple of weeks called epochs in which you look at art, another you look at history, another you look at mathematics. And in the meantime, you're allowed to forget what you had done in the first epoch. Because forgetting is important to develop any faculty. If you can't forget, people could never forget, they block their own development. So you have a breathing between taking in, breathing out, taking some other things in, and forgetting in the meantime. That is a structural, essential thing in Waldorf education, but you refer to a talk you have already had. So, and the school was on autonomous. Gerald said that, our friend, yesterday. In the Waldorf school, you have no state official coming in and telling you what to teach, because those who teach are the ones who have to find out what is the best thing to teach and how is,
right.
How is the best thing. This was practiced to begin with, and they were free from state control, from state money. Now, 100 years later, we have a completely different situation, even in Waldorf schools. In America, most of the schools are state-funded and by that state-controlled.
So
yes. There are a few pure Waldorf schools less, but there they have big problems because the parents come and said, yes, but anthroposophy has some racial bias aspect, which is just purely nonsense because people read some words and then they fabricate all sorts of things. Anthroposophy is the best means to get out of racism because it makes you a human being who is a citizen of the earth and
right.
not only a member of one race or one nation.
But the other thing, if you look at the kind of things that are going on in that way in the United States, they have nothing to do with racism. There's a real push
yeah.
as you are significantly harming and moving out the African American and some of the minority populations, you have this spin and sort of brainwashing, and it's air cover for what I would describe as economic genocide.
Yeah. that is, of course, also pouring on into Europe with all these immigrants from countries where they should be aided, helped to do their job there. We have a chaotic situation in the European sphere and they won't cope with it. So that's, never forget.
Well, because it feeds central control.
Yes.
Yeah, all these things feed central control. And so we're all dealing with this extraordinary brainwashing designed to feed the central control.
Absolutely. Right? And one of the great forerunners of what we have now, the world government, the wished for world government, is Winston Churchill, who said, Europe must be united. Wonderful. People were very raging about that. Great thing. Enjoy, raging in joy. And in the back of his mind was clearly, and he said that, the European unity is the unavoidable first step for the establishing of an all-authoritative world government. Quote, Churchill. So that's where we are. That's why it is what we have now. The world government is the direct opposition of threefold, which is not a program, but which is the answer to human needs to have a differentiated life of soul, spirit, and body.
So part of the push for world government is this globalization requires you to change the model. So part of it is they have to change the model, or the model needs to be changed. That's number one. The other thing is, if you're going to start building colonies on the moon and in Mars, you need a way of interacting between planets. And so those are two of the things that are pushing. Now, if you look at the push for one world government, it doesn't look like legitimate reasons. It simply looks like a few people want to control and own everything.
Absolutely.
Right.
And behind them is the great inspirer. We have talked about him yesterday. That's Ahriman. Ahriman is the biggest opposition force against what threefold would be.
Right.
And threefold is, I repeat, it's not a program. It's an answer to the development of the human beings who is differentiated. You know, it's more differentiated than in the Middle Ages. You could even go back from the three parts of the human being, body, soul, and spirit. And you could say, in the soul, you have a trinity, thinking, feeling, and willing. And they tend to separate in modern time. And you feel that often in a pathological way. There are people with acts without thoughts. There are people with feelings without thoughts, and they don't do acts. And as this is separating, we need a separation of the spheres of the social organism. That's to...
Well, in a healthy system, in an unhealthy system, the psychopaths find each other and are very good at organizing to affect control. In a healthy system, they can't do it.
Excellent.
And one of the reasons for the split between culture, law, and economy is to make it more difficult for them to do it.
And the true economic life, which is international and for which we have a good example in Dean Dunlop erecting the World Power Conference in 1924, helped, inaugurated by the Prince of Wales of that time. The idea is, if you have a world economy, brotherhood, not ruled by a few globalists, then this helps to dam in, to limit the power.
So let me bring that down to practical things. One is, usury has to be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
In the history of the world, every time you legalize usury, it's simply a matter of time until that civilization fails.
Right.
So, but it's interesting. For the annual wrap-up, Nina Hein has written a piece on all the great artwork of Jesus throwing the money changers out of the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So this issue of throwing... keeping it separate is a very old one.
Mm-hmm.
So no usury. The second thing is you can't allow a few people to have a monopoly on currency.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Right.
That was the wrong idea or the wrong practice of the Fed starting with Mr. Wilson.
Right.
As we know.
Right.
And that has not gone away till today.
Right. Although what's interesting, and this gets back to legitimate issues, the group that wanted the Fed knew that unless they had a central point to trade with the rest of the world, they could never come into harmony or balance with the City of London. In other words, the City of London was always going to control unless they had one central point where mm-hmm. they could affect transactions with the rest of the world. So there were legitimate impulses to want to do that. And that's the question. How do you handle those legitimate impulses without getting into, you know, a monopoly of a few? And part of it is, if you have a central bank, you allow it to be owned by the government, not private bankers. That's the problem.
Yep.
The war for the last 50 years has been, you know, the insistence that private people can own the central banks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they get money and power greedy and are uncontrollable. That has to be stopped.
Right. And so there are two things with that I would add. One is transparency. So did Stein ever talk about transparency and the importance of transparency? Or not stopping secrecy?
Yes, of course. And he was very aware of the secrecy politics in right. the West. He was very aware. And he played into the First World War. There are a little group in Great Britain who thought, we have to take over. The Germans are too much thriving in their economic force.
Right.
So let's break that. And they did. Right. And not even that, they were able Twice. To blame them for the whole catastrophe.
Right.
And they were stupid enough to go into a kind of a pit, the Germans. That's the German guilt, is the stupidity of not seeing what's going to be done with them.
Right.
Now, Steiner was very aware of that, and transparency, and as you often stress rightly, trust is the basis of any true social organism. If there is no trust between individuals, mistrust, then you have
force,
and you have the hidden things and the covert operations. Of course, transparency
now,
is everything.
One of the things I remember Steiner saying was that the Templars pushed too fast.
Mm-hmm.
That they had the right idea, but they were pushing too faster than the human race was ready to go.
Yeah. I think the majority of people were not yet ready, but they put a germ, a seed.
Mm-hmm.
And Steiner brought that seed after the French Revolution, where it was evident that people want three different paths through three different ideals, which are all wonderful, but not practicable in a centrally organized organism. It's just simply not possible. So you need, for the freedom, you need a cultural free life where the individual counts. For equality, you need a larger community where the community counts, but has to abide to laws, of course. That's a problem today. And for brotherhood, you have to have a global outlook and interest in humanity, not only in the individual, not only in your own community, but in the humanity.
So I want to talk about invisible technology, because digital technology has changed the whole flow of things. So communities can get together and print their own currency, but if they're still dealing with Five Eyes and NSA system where the people running things have complete 24/7 access to their information and they're basically have no privacy behind a one-way mirror.
Of course.
So the technology has to track and the use and enforcement of the technology has to track. I believe that the leadership now has such amazing technology and invisible technology that it just creates an enormous gap between us.
I totally agree. And an outer manifestation of these created gaps is the absurd ideal of keeping social distance. Look, even the notion social distance.
The magic virus comes to a screeching halt at 6 feet.
But isn't that it's a contradiction in itself? A distance is not the social. Social distance means
there has to be some kind of research they have that if your electromagnetic field is further than this distance from me, that
the
I
virus
can communicate. No. I mean, I think they're trying to stop people from intuitive communication.
Yeah. And that's why you have the masks. You don't know to whom you are speaking anymore. That's terrible.
It is.
And now it goes even. Look, we're going back to Waldorf schools. It goes even into Waldorf schools. In our family, I can see it.
Uh-huh.
The teacher of our little son is suddenly urged to wear a mask.
It's absurd.
It's absurd. And it's causing soul, damage in a way with the children, because they naturally relate to a human being, not just to the upper part of the head.
So to a certain extent, you're training people to behave like livestock.
Yes.
And there's, I keep bringing this up because I'm so enamored with it. I just had C.J. Hopkins on the Salieri Report. He wrote a wonderful article called The Covidian Cult. And one of the things he points out is the cult is insisting on, first they say you don't need a mask, then they say you do need a mask, and insisting on you insisting that whatever they say today is true, even though it's the complete opposite
Absolutely.
Of what they said yesterday.
That reminds me of the line and of the scene of, is it Taming of the Shrew of Shakespeare, where the woman is always saying something else and the man has to comply with it, totaled this and said, yes, this is red. And then she says, but it is not red, it is yellow, and he has to follow it. That's about what we have now.
Right, it's cold.
Yeah.
It's a cold.
Yeah. But you see, there is a spiritual fight behind it. We have talked
Absolutely.
About Michael.
Yeah.
Michael wants us to differentiate our social organism.
Right.
Ahriman says, no way. Central control. Control and power is the highest quality in the universe. They shit on truth. What is truth?
But central control constantly shrinks the economy. Although if you have very dangerous, powerful technology, there's a desire to manage it and risk manage it centrally. So that's part of the challenge.
I agree. But we are in a fight, and this is now in these foggy times. We look out of the window, the fog is still there, but I'm sure it will go away. In this foggy time, we need clear ideas what would be practicable for the future. The state, the centrally controlled state where we are talking about that, the reset state. And I'm afraid to say, I'm so, shameful is not the right word, but Switzerland was a country of spiritual freedom, of cultural freedom, of independence. And now it is run by all these global forces. There is no Switzerland anymore, I'm afraid to say.
Well, I would say it's much diminished.
It's very much diminished.
But if you compare it to other places,
okay.
It's quite...
Thank you. That's of course true too.
Yeah.
And still we are here in a...
Most of the people in the world would be grateful to come and be in this...
Yeah, I agree. I exaggerate it. But the tendency is going into the wrong direction today. You have these puppet governments who, in all the European countries, this issue the same slogan, social distancing, and the rise of the figures of the PCR tests, which is worth nothing. And
well, it's bogus science. It's fake,
yes.
Fake news, fake
yes.
Science, fake.
Yes.
So it's a complete destruction of trust.
Absolutely. And you have the new priests of called the experts. And people believe in that. But let me go back quickly to the origin in 1917. That was a key year in the world history. Wilson brought America into the war sphere. Lenin started the experiment in Russia, the social, imported from the West.
Was it really an experiment or was it just genocide? He just marched in
no,
and killed 80 million Christians.
I know, but the idea was born in the West, and in the West, in certain lodges in England.
Right.
You can see that in certain publications.
Was the goal to destroy Russia or destroy Christianity?
There was people with a long-range perspective. They knew in the Russian area you have the Slavic people. The Slavic people are young people, not like the French, the Romans. They have the mission in the future. And the great brilliant idea was, if we put our foot into this area, we are the masters of the future, indirectly.
Ah.
That was behind it.
Right.
Far-seeing people had this idea, and it worked. And it was brewed up in the West. And they knew the folk ingredients. In a Slavic population, you can do things that would not be accepted in the West. They are moldable. They are receptive.
So you, if Solzhenitsyn is right, you killed 80 million, mostly Christians,
yeah.
With Lenin, etc., with the Bolsheviks.
Yeah.
Then World War II, they stop it and lose 27 million people on that. And then when the Soviet Union comes down, the U.S. goes in and rapes the place.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so you've seen three major genocide waves into Russia that are extraordinary.
And in 1989, Europe was not there because Europe could have filled the gap by bringing out threefold perspectives. But the West was planning to make an expansion of its power into the East. Everything was just thought economically, you know, just economically. And so the experiment or the Bolshevist rule was not finished in 1989, but it was globalized. That's what we have now. The mentality of the Bolshevism was just globalized.
Now, the Bolsheviks were primarily sort of seeded and organized and funded by the Zionists.
By the?
Zionists.
Yeah, also.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And what's interesting, I don't know about World War II, but on the rape of Russia in the 90s, again, it was the U.S. intelligence agencies and the Russian mafia, which is 99% Jewish. So you have a Jewish Christianity war
Absolutely.
Going on in Russia.
And the middle was crushed, and in a way by... due to their own sleepy consciousness, the middle was crushed. We spoke about yesterday, there was a man who had a plan of reorganizing economic flows to the East, Poland, Russia, Herrhausen, the master of the chief of the Deutsche Bank, and he was assassinated because there was the, for the planners in the West, that was not very good, that the Europeans would play an equal part. No, finished. And Fletch Prouty said, it's good if the Europeans see that as a warning. So don't meddle in that. We are the planners and we are the execution force of these plans. So one of the problems is we have no intact European middle. Look at Merkel. Look at Putin. You might say about whatever you want, but Putin is much more, is not only a chauvinist, a Russian. He would be ready to cooperate with European middle. But if the European middle there goes from sanction to sanction, it's hopeless.
Right.
And that will engender a problem in the future.
So I bring this up because the number one story for the Salieri report this year and the 2020 annual wrap-up is the war on God. And the war on God has played out very heavily in Russia.
Yeah.
And yet now we see support and growth in the Russian Orthodox Church. And it's, you know, it's very odd for someone who grew up in my generation in the United States to see Russia protecting God against the Western world.
But it is true.
Yeah.
But that is a shadow from the future, because I think the guiding powers of this world, which are not in Davos, which are not in the reset team, these are spiritual, high, developed individuals or spiritual beings. They know Russia has to be saved for the future. It has a mission. And in the future mission of Russia, the spiritual question is almost normal that people say, of course there is a spiritual world. And that is a good sign that they have to keep the link above.
If you look at the Russian support of the Russian Orthodox Church and cultivation of it, it's almost as though that's part of keeping the legal and cultural strong and separate from the economy.
I agree.
Yeah.
So there is, Russia has a great future, and there are people who want to abuse the future potential of Russia since 100 years. You know, of course, the statement of the Hungarian European man, Freeman, George Freeman, who said the most important line for the American foreign policy in the last 100 years was to prevent a going together of Russia and Germany.
Well, look at Catherine the Great.
Yes.
Look what happens when the Germans and the Russians get together.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Other example. So there is a battlefield and the spiritual question cannot be excluded. That's why it is absurd if people talk about basic income, you know. That's purely thought physically. But Steiner talked about the income question and said, the income must be separated from the work in so far. You can never pay somebody or somebody's time. You can pay a product of the work. There must be a separation. But a basic income is based also on the illusions. First, you have to have your dollars or your euros to get your bread, and then you maybe you can become spiritual. You have to see the spiritual in the physical to begin with. That's what the Templars did. If you use money in a selfless matter way, then that money gets a different quality.
Right.
If you only use it in a selfish way, the money gives access to spiritual beings who rule with that. And the biggest one
is money has energetics.
Yes. That's the Arimanic dominion of money.
Right.
So there is a fight. I mean, we have talked often about the fight situation, and it is much a spiritual fight, much more than a political or emotional or social or external war. It's an invisible fight. And instead of adoring the invisible magic virus, you know, it would be better people start thinking, oh, there are spiritual realities. There are different beings that are for the time being not harmonious. Maybe they will in the end of evolution, but we are not there yet. So we need a spiritual realism. That's one of the points why we have to put our minds to understand the realities of the unseen and not have just very vague concepts about it.
Right.
May I close? I mean...
Yes, first, before you close, you have to do two things. One is you have to tell us if we want to learn more about the threefold social order, what do we read?
Well, you had a good book. Maybe you can put in the title. Where is it?
It's... I'll put it in these the links.
Okay, yeah. These are essays. The basic thing was the... Kernpunkte der sozialen Frage... That was actually almost a bestseller, even in the English world. Fundamentals of the Social Work.
Mm-hmm.
These essays, you have read part of it. There was a number of lectures of the National Economic Course called For Students of National Economy, in which Steiner introduces basic threefold concepts, economic concepts also, like you have a creation of value, based on what you do with physical surroundings, but you have also a creation of values based on your spiritual work to make the physical work more rational, for example.
Mm-hmm.
A double value picture it develops. That would be very good. I don't know the English references. Yeah, that was your first thing.
And then the second is you have to describe the present age and how to find it and get it.
Well, again, if we look out, it seems a bit foggy. But as we have to penetrate to develop the faculty to penetrate fogs, we can see some light. I mean, in a large picture, we are in a light age. We developed that in our conference in Basel. 5,000 years after 5,000 years of Kali Yuga, which trained us to look at the physical, to develop natural science, technology, so this has all been done. Now we have a 5,000-year span to get interested in the spiritual underlying the physical. There is nothing. Right. Now,
one of the greatest quotes that Rappaport had for this year was, this is a 10,000-year-old war.
Yes, yes. But now the war is also to people get into the light age.
Yeah.
Because now we are in the darkest spot of the light age, the time of Ahriman, that is tempting to annihilate everything we have achieved so far. That people don't have the memory, there is a cosmic past of our lives, etc., etc. So what is practically, I don't know, the full answer.
You still have to tell people how to find the magazine, The Present Age.
How to find it?
Okay, so you have a website?
Yes. We have a website. It is called www.Perseus. Perseus is the Michael star in the constellation at heavens, from which every autumn you have the meteorites coming. Perseus was the Michael of the ancients. I didn't know that when I coined the name Perseus.
But it's .ch, right?
P-E-R-S-E-U-S www.ch.
And all the information on how to subscribe is on the website.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's there. It's all right there. That's Percy's.
And you have a long-standing tradition of not marketing.
Look, I like to make some propaganda for other people, but I seem to have a lack of making good propaganda for my own work.
Uh-huh.
That's it. But, well, maybe you help us. So, and we have subscribers, new subscribers.
We have great subscribers. Wonderful. I love your clan. That's what I call them.
Yeah. And I'm happy that you make a short or whatever, an interview with Osher. She is very key in the present age. And that might, of course, help to connect.
So I should say the German magazine is Europa.
The Europäer.
And the English is the present age.
Present age, they're not totally identical.
Right.
The basic articles of the Europäer are being translated ably by Terry Borgman.
Mm-hmm.
But some extras are only in the present age. I think that's fine. That's natural.
Right.
And so we hope to go on keeping the flame burning, let's say it like that, of people with an individual will of individual discernment in all this foggy area.
Okay, well, as you know, I'm very optimistic about what can be accomplished in 2021, and I don't underestimate the difficulty. You and I were down in the village yesterday, and you do something I always do. I always check out the local tabloid and see what they're saying.
Yes.
And on the front is this scary shrieky,
yes.
I mean, total shriek-o-meter.
Yes.
And the COVID tsunami
is coming.
But it was really funny. I then jumped on the internet yesterday afternoon to do some work, and there was a Twitter feed or a post from the BBC, and it was this emergency room doctor, and he says, "It's a tsunami." And I said, "Oh,
is he?
The fax has gone out. This is the new word."
That's why I'm so grateful for everyone who brings a piece of truth to the light.
Yeah.
Be it about the assassination of Kennedy, being about the fraud with the money, that what you did. Everyone who clarifies the truth breaks through the fog.
Well, the thing that really changed my view, you know, there were three things that changed my view of 2021. One was the you and I going to see Neowise.
Yeah.
And this remarkable shift in the cosmological energy.
Yeah.
And then we tried to see the conjunction.
Yes.
And we didn't see it, but you could feel it. There's a shift. And you realize, oh, the old is going and new possibilities.
The new is coming.
But the thing that really did it for me was when we put together the hero section in the injection fraud, the second quarter wrap-up, and we brought all those people together.
Wonderful.
And we realized, if you look at the accumulation of what they and many other heroes did, thousands of people, they totally shifted everything.
Yeah.
It's remarkable what they accomplished.
You see, here we have another Gideon. Gideon element, the few can do much if they are rightly composed, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you have a new Gideon hero, that's Beckett also. He was a Gideon type.
Yeah.
And in that sense, we can be absolutely positive.
Yeah.
And I think our meetings we had here in Basel, in Scala, are proof that people are attracted. And now you were in our oasis in Switzerland. I don't want to give the address for the NSA.
Oh, I think they know where we are.
You think they know it?
Okay, well, Thomas Meyer, on behalf of all the many people who listen to these interviews, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and to know you and to know your amazing clan and audience and to be refreshed and informed by your insights.
Thank you, Catherine, for inviting me to the Solari clan.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.